Next week will mark 8 years since one of the deadliest wildfires in U.S. history, when 19 members of the Granite Mountain Hotshots were overcome by flames outside of Prescott, Arizona. A sudden shift in weather trapped the men in a desert canyon as they battled the Yarnell Hill Fire.
Breaking news, a tragic end to a desperate search for 19 firefighters missing in action in Arizona.
They were battling the fast-moving Yarnell Hill wildfire, which has already burned 2,000 acres in central Arizona. Now, sadly, officials have confirmed that all 19 of those firefighters have been killed.
The threat of catastrophic fire has only grown since then. Unrelenting drought conditions across the West are putting firefighters' lives at risk. Fernanda Santos is a contributing columnist for The Washington Post and author of the 2016 book, The Fire Line, The Story of the Granite Mountain Hotshots, and she joins us now on Skype. Fernanda, welcome back to Here and Now.
It's good to speak with you, Peter.
And can you just remind us again what happened June 30th, 2013, and why that fire became so deadly?
So on June 30th, 2013, a team of firefighters known as the Granite Mountain Hotshots went on a daily run to a fire that was burning in central Arizona, right off the small town of Yarnell, Arizona, and came into a canyon as the weather turned. A monsoon storm came, so very high winds came and pushed their fire in their direction. And they essentially were trapped and unable to escape and died side by side in this canyon, trying in vain to protect themselves with fire shelters, these fire protectors that really don't do much when it comes to direct fire contact. And as you said, it remains one of the deadliest wildfires in U.S. history to this day. But, you know, as it often happens, Peter, time passes, we continue to remember them. But the reality is that their deaths really have not changed much in terms of the way that the federal government in particular handles wildfires in this country.
Well, I do want to get to that for sure, and that was the topic of a recent Washington Post column that you wrote. But I know you also, in the course of writing the book about these young men who died, you got close to some of the family members who they left behind. How are they doing?
I guess it comes a point when you realize, and for these families, the ones especially that I've been mostly in touch with, they realize that, you know, they have no choice but to move forward. Some of the widows have remarried, had kids. Others have married and divorced. The parents, perhaps I would say, are the ones whose grief is most painful to me when I speak to them. As a mother, you know, I keep thinking what it would be like if I lost my child so quickly and so tragically. And it really is still difficult to me to this day to talk to them, although I still do. I stay in touch.
So what has happened in the last 8 years? Have we learned anything or changed the way that we approach fighting these huge wildfires because of what happened?
The short answer is no. You know, the wildfire apparatus in this country is pretty complicated, and I'll try to make it really simple and quick so that your listeners can understand. It's primarily run by the federal government and primarily by the U.S. Forest Service. And many of those, if not most of those, are seasonal firefighters. And that means they start working around mid-April and they stay working until mid-October. That has been historically considered the fire season in the United States. But as we know very well, our climate has been changing. We've had fires in Arizona in areas where normally we have snow in February. We've had wildfires there in February. We've had wildfires in Canada and Alaska during the winter, right? So things are definitely changing, but we really haven't adapted to create a year-round wildland firefighting force in the federal government so that we have firefighters available to fight fires when they happen, but also firefighters or crews available to treat these forests, to take the dead leaves and branches and make it less likely that whenever a fire burns, that fire is so big and catastrophic that it cannot be stopped.
So in this column that you wrote for the Washington Post last week, the headline says something to the effect of the playbook for fighting wildfires doesn't work anymore. Is that what you're referring to there? I mean, what's the consequence of having seasonal workers when it's a full-time job?
Well, the consequence, one of the main consequences, that we're always playing catch up, right? We're always reacting to fire and not being preemptive, or at least as preemptive as we should be. But there's another issue with that, Peter. And to me, that's perhaps the cruelest of the issues. And that has to do with employment status and pay for wildland firefighters. An entry-level wildland firefighting job with the Forest Service seasonal job pays about $13 an hour. You will make more working the drive-through window at Chick-fil-A or flipping burgers at McDonald's than you would make fighting wildfires, which is an incredibly risky, demanding, and necessary job. The seasonality of the job also prevents or precludes a lot of the all the seasonal firefighters from receiving the types of benefits that full-time employees do, like sick days or paid days off. So these guys, and I say guys because the vast majority of them are men, they really make most of their money out of overtime pay. So they need fires to burn. And it's a really perverse equation and twisted equation to think that somebody's job is to fight fires, yet for them to make enough to support themselves and their families, they need fires to keep burning.
Well, and it takes a toll as well. Reva Duncan is the executive secretary of the group Grassroots Wildland Firefighters, and she testified in April before the House Natural Resources Committee about the stress that her firefighters have been under. Let's listen to that.
I had more firefighters reach out for help with thoughts of suicide, depression, and traumatic events than at any other time in my career. I have driven a good friend to rehab. I have held onto a firearm for another friend who was afraid they would use it on themselves. And I have escorted the body of a fallen firefighter home to their family. I myself have struggled with my own demons after having several line of duty deaths and serious accidents occur on my watch.
It's terrible. What do we do about this? How do we fix it?
We tend to hold up these firefighters as heroes, but then we forget about them. They witness the destruction. They see the loss that people suffer. They see colleagues get killed by fallen tree branches, by rocks that roll down. It's not just the fire itself that's the danger. It's the, everything around them that's dangerous. The roads they travel on are dangerous. And because they don't have access to comprehensive health benefits that include mental health treatment, mental health services, they often don't have people to talk to about that. And then there's the macho culture, right? Like, you're a man, you're not, you don't, you just suck it up. You just, you know, hold it in and you just keep going and do your job. But at one point it explodes. And there has been a number of suicides among wildland firefighters, a lot of alcoholism, alcohol abuse, drug abuse, all of that in an effort to numb themselves, when all they need is for us to understand that they're human, they struggle too, and that we as a nation, if we want them to protect us from wildfires, we also should work very hard to protect them from themselves.
Were the 19 men who died 8 years ago fighting the Yarnell Hill fire, were those the same pressures and conditions they were facing?
Oh, without a doubt. I very vividly remember Roxanne Warnicki, the widow of Billy Warnicki, one of the firefighters who died. He was a rookie on the crew, a Marine. And she said to me that Billy, her husband, that he would fight fire thinking about making money because he had to have money to pay for doctors if his daughter needed to go to the doctor, and that he would leave for every fire with that pressure on his shoulders. So the struggle was very true for the Granite Mountain Hotshots. The city of Prescott that employed them ended up being sued by families of the seasonal firefighters. And these families won the right to be included in the state pension system so that they would be compensated equal to the families of the full-time firefighters. What we really need to change is the way the federal system operates, because that is the system that truly controls the wildland firefighting force in this country.
Fernando Santos, a contributing columnist for The Washington Post and author of the book The Fire Line, The Story of the Granite Mountain Hotshots. Fernando, thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter. It was great talking to you.